I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox, and thanks for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500, and we'll get to as many of them as we can. Governor, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Marie. It's great to be back with you.
It's nice to have you here today to answer questions from our listeners. The first thing that we need to talk about, though, is something that just happened just minutes ago on the floor of the House of Representatives. The House voting to go along with the Senate and to immediately end the mask mandate in Salt Lake and Summit counties. And I wish you were here to see, or maybe you can see, all of the texts that we have received on this subject. And, of course, they are polarizing on both sides of the issue. But give us your perspective. I'm going to read you one of the listeners from earlier today who said, Governor Cox, your approach on COVID seems to signal that we're raising a white flag and surrendering, that everyone's just going to get COVID, so we should give up. They'd like you to help them understand why they shouldn't feel this way based on your public comments and actions. Are we giving up and just kind of giving in to COVID?
Well, absolutely not, Maria, and I appreciate the question. We're not giving up, but what we are doing are focusing on the things that we actually know make a difference. And I think that's very important for people to understand. Look, we've been very fortunate here in the state of Utah. Unfortunately, the coverage, and this is normal. I understand how this works. Fear drives more clicks than anything else. But for the people that are really studying this disease, there's a little bit of a, and this is tough for humans. We don't adapt well to change. And the virus itself is changing. The virus itself has changed significantly since the very beginning. The Omicron variant is so different from the original virus, from the Alpha virus, and from the Delta virus. It's so much more contagious, and I think that's hard for people to really grasp. Alpha was 2 times more contagious than the original variant. Delta was 2 times more contagious than Alpha. And Omicron is 4 times more contagious than Delta. So now we're getting in multiples. It's just so much more contagious. On the flip side, and that's why we're seeing these giant spikes, there seems to be also this lack of a perspective as to what's happening everywhere around us. We're kind of in our bubbles, and especially the local media has only focused on the worst parts, and again, not given any perspective. And so this is a 21-day spike. It's a 21-day spike in every country. It's a 21-day spike in every state. And every state is seeing record numbers of COVID. And then after 21 days, those numbers drop quickly. So that's some positive news. So hospitalizations is a critical number to watch as well. And yes, our hospitals are full, and that's something we're very concerned about. But I guarantee you that almost all of your listeners, although they know that we have very high COVID cases, have no idea that our hospitalization rate is less than half the national average. Yesterday, we were had the sixth lowest hospitalization rate in the country. Now, that's because we haven't given up on COVID, but we're doing the things that we know work. and that is that we've done a very good job of getting immunizations, getting shots out to people, the vaccine out to especially our most vulnerable populations, the population that is most likely to be hospitalized, and that's our elderly population. And so it's not that we're giving up on the virus. We have stopped doing things that aren't proven to make a huge difference. Now, so that comes up to the question of masks. I do believe that N95 masks work against Omicron. And every expert, you can go and look at this, cloth masks do not work against Omicron. CNN's chief correspondent, so this is not a far-right conservative, the CNN's chief medical correspondent said that cloth masks are window dressing when it comes to Omicron because it's so much more contagious. They did have some impact when it came to the Alpha variant, but not Omicron. So we have to adjust to the virus. Now, the other piece of this is important is that we have tools we didn't have earlier in our fight against the virus. There was a time when masks were the only thing we had. Now we don't. We have all of these other tools, again, especially vaccinations. And with N95 masks, you can protect yourself. And so people have an opportunity now to make those decisions. And the good news is, and I want to give people the good news because, again, some of this gets left out. The first place to spike in Utah was Summit County. Summit County had by far the highest rates of COVID with Omicron, and after 21 days, like clockwork, we are seeing those numbers dropping now in Summit County, which means that the rest of the state is not far behind. We actually measure, because testing everywhere across the country, testing is not the best measurement now because it's so many people are testing at home, and it's harder to get tests because supplies are so limited. So we're looking actually at wastewater, and we test the amount of the virus in wastewater, and we've seen that huge drops in the virus in wastewater in Summit County, and we've seen the plateau now in most parts of the Wasatch Front all along the Salt Lake Valley. We've seen that plateau, which means that now we are starting to make that turn, and we'll be coming back down. So we are not giving up, but what we're doing is giving people the best information, the best ability to protect themselves, and then giving them an opportunity to do that.
So, Governor, I hear you say that N95 masks do provide good prevention to COVID. One of the things, though, that I don't understand, the mask mandate that was in effect in these counties only lasts about 10 more days. And if we know that masks do help us and can help teachers in the classroom, why do away with it? It seems like there's more to it behind that and that there's really a statement being made here rather than looking at public health.
Well, you'll have to talk to the legislature about their decision for making those changes. So as you mentioned, I think this is a little confusing for some people. I actually don't have any authority over that decision. It's not a bill that comes to my, the law says that it's a resolution that is passed by the legislature. And so I'll let them speak to that. And we do this all the time. We're conflating two different things. There's a question about whether masks work, and then there's a question about whether mask mandates work. And I want to say specifically with Omicron, again, because Omicron is very different. We keep having these alpha fights in an Omicron world. There is no evidence that mask mandates are making a difference anywhere in the United States. In fact, there's actually lots of evidence that mask mandates are not making any difference in the United States. If you look at the states that have had some of the highest rates of Omicron spread, they have mask mandates. Many of us were in LA County for the Rose Bowl. They have a mask mandate there, and their numbers in LA County were no better than ours. I'll actually point to something closer to home. You mentioned schools, and so the question is, you said a mask mandate helps in schools. Actually, the evidence does not support that in Omicron. The Salt Lake City School District, which had a mask mandate for that entire time, actually had higher rates of Omicron last week before the mask mandate went into effect than schools right around it that did not have a mask mandate. And you may be asking yourselves, well, that's a little counterintuitive. How does that work? Again, Omicron is so much more contagious. And as humans, we're not very good at wearing masks, the right way. So we see this, we have a mask mandate and people go into restaurants wearing masks and then they immediately take them off to eat and drink. Well, the virus isn't sitting there thinking, oh, wait, they're eating and drinking now. I'm not going to infect them. That's not how this works. So wearing a mask into a restaurant to eat and then taking it off is silly, especially with how quickly Omicron spreads. Again, it's different than the other viruses. You could get away with taking in a little of Alpha and not get contagious and not get infected. You can't do that with Omicron. And so every time you lower your mask to take a drink, every time you move your mask to the side to take to catch your breath or to say something to someone, if there's Omicron around you, you're probably going to get infected. So if you have an N95 mask and if you wear it the right way and you never move it down, you're going to be protected. So the question isn't, do masks work? The question is, do mask mandates work? And right now with Omicron, again, there's no evidence in any state that some state did better than some other state, or some county did better than some other county, or some school district did better than some other school district because they had a mask mandate. So that's, that's where I think we have to be really honest with people, and not give them a false sense of security. If you wear an N95 mask, you wear it religiously, you wear it whenever you're around other people, then you will be protected. And everybody should have that choice. There's also this crazy idea that if we don't have a mask mandate, that means nobody can wear masks. And that's just not true. I still wear a mask some places, whether there's a mask mandate or not. When I'm in a very big crowd, or I think that there may be somebody I'm around that's impacted, I'm also wear it when I'm around other people who are at high risk or would like me to wear a mask. I think it's something that we can do. It's symbolic. It's a way to say, yep, I'm here. I'm willing to do that for you. That's not the question. The question is whether government should be enforcing that or not. It's really interesting with schools in most of the rest of the world, especially for kids under the age of 12, they've never mandated masks, and there are definitely concerns that we're hearing from childhood experts who are worried about child development, especially younger children's ability to see faces. But again, we know that in a couple weeks, as you mentioned, this is going to be gone. Now, why the legislature felt like they needed to weigh in when there's only a couple weeks left for this mask mandate, I can't speak for them, and I'm not going to speak for them. It probably would have been fine and would have gone away after a couple weeks anyway. But that's the decision they made. But I'm so done with these fights. You're getting just as many texts, I'm sure, from people who are pro mask and anti mask, and it's a dumb fight to be having right now.
But Governor, the question is this: we're constantly hearing from state leaders about wanting to have local government control and being upset with the Biden administration for not allowing local government control. What kind of message does this send to the local governments if you take away their control to protect their own communities?
Sure, and that's a very good argument. That is a very good argument, and it's an argument that I appreciate. And so again, I didn't have a say in peeling that back. I do respect local governments and their ability to make decisions. Now, I do want to say there is a distinction, and we fail to make this distinction sometimes. You can make an argument that the federal government should not be imposing control on states, but there is a constitutional distinction there. The states exist, and the Constitution is very clear on this. That the powers, not granted directly to the federal government belong to the states. The states are sovereign authorities that are separate apart and co-equal actually to, in fact, in many cases, there's an argument to be made that they supersede, the federal government. And so those two things exist in the Constitution. That is not true with cities and counties. They do not have the same type of constitutional, protections that states have vis-a-vis the federal government. And so it's not the same argument, but it is an argument that conservatives do make all the time, and it's one that I make all the time. And sometimes making that argument means that local governments are going to do some things that we disagree with, and we have to be okay with that. And I think there's certainly an argument for that in this case.
Governor, we need to take a break, but I just have to ask you one more question on mask mandates, and that is, you say the legislature is doing this, but you did exempt state government buildings from mask mandates.
Well, it's been positioned as exempting state facilities from mask mandates, and that's just not true. What is true is that county mandates don't apply to state buildings for the reasons I just mentioned, that counties and cities do not have authority over the state. So it's not that I exempted the state buildings from a county mandate. The state buildings were always exempted from county mandates. What I didn't do was issue my own mandate for state buildings for the reasons that I just mentioned. So I had to come to a conclusion. Am I going to mandate masks in state buildings? Do I think that mask mandates make enough of a difference that I should be requiring people to do that? And so I asked public health officials to give me the best data they had on mask mandates, the best data we had with Omicron on mask mandates. And no one could provide me any data that showed that mask mandates were making a difference. And so I decided I was not going to issue a mask mandate for state buildings, which is very different than saying I was exempting them from local counties. That's already a function of the law.
Thank you so much for that explanation. Let's take a break. We do have callers waiting to ask very important questions. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Get your questions answered by the governor.
Call 801-575-8255
to join Let Me Speak to the governor on KSL News Radio.
Your questions this hour are on all the important issues in the state of Utah. Let's take our first phone call, and that is from James in Provo. And good afternoon, James.
Well, good afternoon, Maria, and good afternoon, Governor. Anyhow, one of the major issues facing Utah and many of the western states is water conservation. And by the way, I listened to your State of the State last night, Governor. You did great. I was just wondering, in the vein of preserving water, back in my grandma's day, I remember she had rainwater that just flowed off the edge of the rooftop down into a cistern, and it could be pumped out later for watering the lawn and et cetera, to where it would preserve existing clean water supplies for drinking and utilize something that many people discard. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, James, thank you. It's great to hear from you again, and I appreciate the question. And thank you for listening to the State of the State last night. I'm sure all of the listeners listened last night, and if you didn't, I hope you'll get a chance to listen, because we did talk about water and what's happening in our state, James. And I appreciate what you said, because you're right. And some homeowners are still doing that. We actually had a law a few years ago that was passed that it promotes and allows for rainwater harvesting. With 255-gallon barrels above ground, up to 2,500 gallons below ground, you can go to waterrights.utah.gov to learn more about cisterns and rainwater harvesting in Utah. We don't typically have enough rain during the summer months to do much beyond spot watering on the yard, and that's why conservation is so very, very important. And we're going to be encouraging, of course, more conservation as we move forward, as we are one of the driest states in the nation. Water is really critical to our ability to make sure that our kids and grandkids can live here. And Utah stepped up in a big way. I was so proud. We saved billions and billions of gallons of water this past year because of Utah's willingness to step up. But I would encourage you to watch for those bills that will be coming. We have several bills that are being run right now that will help with with the conservation effort, and you're right, rainwater is one of the ways that people can use that. Again, you can go to a couple places. One is waterrights.utah.gov for more information there. And then we encourage you to go to and again make sure that you're doing it the right way. And waterrights.utah.gov is a place to go and find out more information. Thank you, James.
All right, James, thanks for your call. We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. The number for you to call to ask your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text your questions to 57500.
Get your questions answered by the governor.
Call 801-575-8255
to join Let Me Speak to the governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Schlaus, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox, taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. Governor, the next text question is, will you veto the income tax reduction and ask lawmakers to go back and lower the food tax?
Well, thank you. So we're still in negotiations on what that's going to look like. I actually have not proposed lowering the food tax, what I have proposed is a tax credit, a grocery tax credit that would be given out to people, our most vulnerable. What we're seeing right now is a huge increase in inflation, which is a tax in a way, and it's a tax that hurts those who are the most vulnerable in our state and in our country. We are seeing that inflation at rates that we haven't seen since I was 6 years old in 1982. That's how long it's been since we've seen inflation this high, 7% over last year were the latest numbers that we received last week. And so what I've proposed is a grocery tax credit. We are having those discussions right now with the legislature. I am going to support an income tax. I'm going to support whatever tax breaks that we can come to. I want to get this hard-earned money back into the pockets of as many Utahns as possible. I think there's a way to do that where everyone enjoys a tax break from the people making the very least in the state of Utah to the people making the most. There's a way to do that, and I think we will be able to find some compromise on making that happen.
Let's take our next listener, and that is Memphis in Harriman. Good afternoon, Memphis. What is your question?
Hi there. So I'm going to kind of circle back to the beginning of your conversation when, you know, this thing kind of started about getting rid of this mask mandate. I still am just kind of trying to understand this with our numbers being so high. And again, I heard you indicate that masks really don't help unless you have an N95 and everybody keeps them on with this Omicron variant. But I beg to differ. My spouse is in healthcare, and these hospitals are just, you know, I think they're to the point where, I don't know, just raise, you know, I guess the white flag and just, you know, say, hey, I'm done with this, because I can't imagine why. Well, you know, I guess I can, because we do live in a state that is of not the party that I'm, you know, a part of. I just don't understand what the kind of hurriedness of this was and let this mask mandate run out. Is it the people that, you know, are at these school board meetings or, you know, pleading about their children not wearing a mask? I don't know. I mean, can you help me out with that? Because I heard everything you said. I kind of came in a little bit late, but I did hear you say that these masks really aren't helpful with this Omicron variant, which I'm sort of confused about, because again, I don't know if you've seen our numbers, but our numbers are still ridiculous. The hospitals are full.
Thank you,
Memphis. I mean,
yep. Yeah, thank you. So I know you missed part of it, so I'll share this. So what I would ask is I would ask everyone to go look at the numbers in every other state, including those states that have mask mandates. And what you will see is that it is the same in every other state. You mentioned the hospitalization rates, and I would encourage you to look at the hospitalization rates in every other state. And what you will find is that Utah is one of the best in the country. We actually have some of the lowest hospitalization rates in the country. Our hospitalization rates are less than half the national average. Could you imagine if our hospitalization rates were like all the other states, even the national average, double what they were right now? You are right that our hospitals are full. I want to specifically thank you and more importantly your spouse and all our healthcare workers. This is so incredibly frustrating, this journey that they've been on for the past 2 years. Somebody said that the first year was about surviving, and now it's about enduring. I mean, it's been just incredible what they have had to go through the past 2 years. There are some positive signs, as I'm sure your husband has shared, and that is that we have far fewer in the ICU with Omicron. It's not as dangerous or deadly as past variants. Also, we do have so many more vaccines, and that's really important. What we're also seeing is that hospital stays are a lot shorter. Under Delta, there was a national study that under Delta, the average hospital stay was like 4 to 5 days. And with Omicron, it's about a day and a half. But there's so much more of it. That's why we're seeing that high throughput. More people are going to the hospital. They're just staying less time. And fortunately, they're not dying or needing to receive the same type of intensive care. So that's a big piece of this. And again, we are not giving up. You hear me constantly calling for vaccines. The best way to protect yourself, the best way to protect your family is not a mask mandate. The best way to protect yourself and your family is to get vaccinated. If you look at the hospitalizations right now, it is still mostly amongst the still mostly unvaccinated people. Those with vaccinations and those with boosters are still doing very, very well with Omicron, and so that's what we're doing. We are continuing to work to get everyone vaccinated, and especially our most vulnerable vaccinated and boosted, so that they do not end up in the hospital. Now, you mentioned the legislature. I have not been able the vote that happened right before I came in here. And so I don't know why they felt it was so important to do it now and not wait, until this expired in 10 days. What I would encourage everyone to do is to go to the website, le.utah.gov. That's the legislature's website. Go to le.utah.gov, and you can actually listen to the debate. It's one of the cool things. Utah has been recognized for having some of the best technology. You can go and click on it, and you can the cameras are there. You can hear both the Republicans and the Democrats. You can hear their arguments for why they thought it was important to do it now, why they shouldn't have done it now. You can hear those arguments about local control versus not local control. I can kind of imagine how those went, but I didn't get a chance to listen to that. At the end of the day, I'll go back and listen to most of those debates and learn more about that as you will be able to do. But I think it would be helpful for everyone to actually go listen to the debate and hear what they had to say. It may convince you. It may not convince you. We're pretty polarized right now. But all I can tell you is that with Omicron, after 21 days, cases start coming down. That's true in states that have a mask mandate, in states that don't have a mask mandate. And so we are starting to turn that corner. Summit County is coming down. We have evidence that shows that that Salt Lake County has plateaued, and other parts of the Wasatch Front have plateaued, and we expect to follow that, that the virus will follow the same behavior as it has everywhere else in the entire world.
All right, Governor, we do have another listener on the line would like to weigh in on this issue, and that is Tamler in Draper. And Tamler, what was your question or comment?
Hi, how are you guys today?
Doing well, thank you.
Okay. Well, the first thing I want to mention is it's great that Omicron's coming down and so on and so forth, but there. What about the next mutation is the one thing. The second thing, some states have more illnesses, obviously, than Utah because they're much bigger populations. So, and mandates, to me, do work. The problem in Utah is they're not enforced. I can tell you that because I've been in places that have the mandate, and people are not wearing them. And before the mandates, hardly anybody was wearing a mask, even the vaccinated people, which made absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. But if you don't enforce the mandate, no, it will not work. So I don't like the idea of saying mandates don't work. Mandates would work if they were enforced, and they're not being enforced.
Thank you.
The excuse at Walmart was they didn't want to put their people at risk.
Yeah, thank you, Tamler, for that question, and you probably don't feel, but you're kind of making the case for me and for this discussion. So first of all, when I say cases are higher in other states, that is adjusting for population. So those are per capita rates, and we've seen everybody's going to take their turn in the top 10 with Omicron because it goes up so high and then it comes back down. And so we weren't in the top 10, and now we are in the top 10. And probably next week we won't be in the top 10. That's how Omicron works, and it's all based on we always adjust for population, so that's important. And you're exactly right that it is not being enforced. And what's interesting about this is again the people who need to wear the masks, who need the protection the most are the unvaccinated, who also coincidentally or not turn out to be the people who are least likely to wear masks. And so you have a whole bunch of people who are vaccinated and who have are maybe even boosted and have a very little chance, if any, maybe zero chance of ending up in the hospital or in ICUs who are wearing masks. They're the ones that don't need to, and you have others who need the protection who aren't. But that's the thing. Even in the Salt Lake County building, they weren't enforcing the mask mandate, and it was Salt Lake County's mask mandate. And so so even if you believe that it's going to work, the Salt Lake Tribune said that we should call out the National Guard to enforce these mandates, which is hilariously ridiculous and very embarrassing for them. And that's the type of thing where we have to have that has to be part of the conversation. If there's no evidence from other states or school districts or counties that it is lowering the rate or they're having reduced rates of Omicron because of a mask mandate. Again, I'm saying mask mandates where government is intervening, then that's the question we have to ask. Now, there are people in this state, and I understand, there are people who believe, and I've heard this on the call today, well, we have to do something. Even if it doesn't work, we have to do something. We should do that. That's a very rational decision. It's a very rational conversation, and it probably depends on your view of government, on the role of government. I'm the type of person that believes that government intervention should be a last resort, not a first resort, and should only be used if there is clear evidence that it's going to make a difference. And so, that's kind of a principle-based conversation. But we can disagree with. Without hating each other. We can disagree without calling each other names or thinking that you're a communist and I'm trying to kill people. That's not helpful at all. And unfortunately, we see far too much of that. What I will tell you is that in a couple weeks, Omicron will be down. You ask about the next variant, and that's true. If we have another variant where there is evidence that masks make all the difference, then that's a very different conversation and one that we will have. Now again, I want to give some optimistic news out there to people. There are many experts in this country who believe that Omicron will help us move out of the pandemic phase and into the endemic phase, which means that it will be here with us. We will probably have seasonal spikes, but we will be treating it much like we treat other illnesses like the flu and others as this variant has changed. And part of this variant being so explosive and impacting so many people, even people who are vaccinated, who are catching the disease but not having severe illness, that part is a good sign. And is a way that this will provide a broader community immunity, a broader herd immunity, as it's sometimes called. And this happened, by the way, in 1918 with the flu. Actually, it happened in 1920. There was a third wave of the flu that was much less deadly, but was much more contagious and impacted a lot of people. And that helped move into the endemic phase. So there really are some silver linings here. And I hope we can get back to coming together and talking about those as we, like every every single state and every single country in the world moves through this very high spike, and then things come down quickly.
All right, Governor, we need to take a break. The number to call for the final segment of Let Me Speak to the Governor, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
Get your questions answered by the governor.
Call 801-575-8255
to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for this final segment of Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. Our next listener, Governor, is the parent of a toddler who needs some relief from long and frequent quarantine and isolation. And this person says they want to see a mask optional thing in classrooms for kids of all ages, but they're asking you what parents can do to promote rational policies in daycares that are more balanced as we enter this next phase of the pandemic.
Well, thank you. And what I would encourage people to do is, again, to continue to reach out to their legislators to have those conversations. And that's where we're really trying to go and trying to set the example, again, to get to a rational place in all of this as we move forward. And we will start treating this like any other illness at some point. Again, the mass testing that we've done, we don't do that for other illnesses. That will go away soon. When you feel sick, you go to the doctor. If you need to, and if you're high risk, and you'll get tested for RSV, you'll get tested for the flu, and you'll get tested for COVID, and then they'll be able to as new medications, they've already come on. We just don't have enough for everyone right now, but we will soon. And then they'll give you the medication that is best for you, and we feel very confident that we'll get back to a much more rational place.
Our next caller is Paul in Spanish Fork. Good afternoon, Paul. What is your question?
Hi, Governor Cox. Thanks for your service. I really appreciate the work you've done and the tone that you've set. I think sometimes a little bit different from what we hear from politicians nationally. It's on that point, though, that I want to ask you about your power compared to the power of the legislature. I have heard stories, I've seen examples where the legislature's tried to really roll back authority that you have. I mean, obviously, we're talking about COVID a lot, you know, emergency orders, emergency things that you can do. But more so than that, I mean, when the framers designed our government, or the federal government and the state government similar, they set up a system of checks and balances, you know, and their thought was that each branch of government would be sort of selfish with how they defended their power. And a lot of what we're seeing from the legislature is they're making that power grab, and I don't know that we're necessarily seeing that on your side or in your role. They, you know, continually try to diminish your role. And what I think is important about that is the legislature essentially draws their own boundaries. You do not, and your boundary never changes. The state of Utah can never be gerrymandered. We all support, or we all have you, you know, as an elected official that we can vote for. So in a way, you're probably the most representative person there. In the whole government. So anyway, I'd like you to comment on that and tell me what you're doing for your power.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. So it's a really good question, and it's one we've actually talked together as our staff about. I will tell you there is one change that I think was a huge mistake, but obviously members of the legislature will disagree with me on that. And it was a change made by the people of the state of Utah. So a couple years ago, there was a constitutional change that was put on the ballot. And just so people know the way constitutional changes work, the legislature passes those changes with they have to, it's basically with a veto-proof majority, and that's in the Constitution as well. So two-thirds have to support it. So the governor doesn't get involved, can't be involved in those decisions. It's not like it comes to my desk. So they pass it with two-thirds, and then it goes on the ballot, and then the people of the state of Utah get to vote on it. And it's something that I opposed. It's something that I opposed very vocally, and that was giving the legislature the ability to call themselves into special session. And historically, only the governor could do that. We had the 45 days set aside in the Constitution, but if the legislature wanted to come back in, then the governor had to call them back in. And that led to, the governor had a lot of authority there. The governor was able to push back. We were able to prevent them from coming into session, and that matters in a very big way. It was a narrow vote. Even though I opposed it, Governor Herbert opposed it, the people of the state of Utah supported it. I think it was a mistake. I think I've been proven right on that. I have heard lots of people that voted for it who've come back and said, you know, I really wished I hadn't voted for that. But it did change the balance of power in the state. There's no question. Now, the executive branch still has a lot of power, still has a lot of authority, and I respect the authority of the legislature. We have had past governors that did not respect the authority of the legislature. They are a co-equal branch of government, and sometimes, and this has happened especially at the national level, the chief of executive has gotten significantly much more power than Congress, and I think that's a mistake too. I think you can have too much executive power and people not having those checks the other way around. But we are watching very closely. Now, when there is a veto-proof majority, we can still veto things, and we have done in the past, and we'll continue to do that. It's often an exercise in futility. So sometimes we will allow things to go into law without our signature as just a kind of a protest to say we don't support this, but we recognize that it will be overturned or vetoed. But when there are power grabs, when they're trying to remove authority from the executive branch or do something that is in the purview of the executive branch, then we will often resort to the courts. We haven't had a lawsuit like that in a while. We have had some over the past few years, but I'm not afraid to challenge them, and they know that. The good news is we have a very good working relationship right now, and that's where we can make the biggest difference. I work very closely to get changes made to legislation before that legislation gets passed so that it's something that I feel is in the best interest of the state, and then we'll veto where necessary. But I appreciate the very thoughtful question and conversation, and I love having a question that's not COVID related. So thanks for that, Paul.
And there were a number of them, Governor, that are still yet to come. But unfortunately, we are out of time. People wanted to know about fixing roads. There were more questions about water conservation. But again, we're out of time.
We'll have some for next time.
I know. We have about 20 texts and at least 5 callers who did not get on the line. But Governor, thank you so much for spending an hour with us and answering the questions of Utahns.
Thank you, Maria.
And you've been listening to Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.